We're going to try to cover two reasons tonight. Reason number 20 and reason number 21. We're moving right along, and there's only 26 of these, so we only have five to go after this. Reason number 20 is the stories of the betrayal by Judas are not consistent. So this falls into that same category that we've been working on for the last couple reasons of discrepancies between the gospel narratives as being a major concern. And so he lists several of these discrepancies here. Did Jesus intentionally die, or did he die because he was betrayed? The name of the betrayer is highly significant. He says that's Judas. You know, Judas is actually Yehuda, which is very close. That's the Yehudi is Jew. So the idea being that perhaps Judas was selected as the name in order to blame, to symbolically blame the Jewish people for the death of Jesus. And indeed, that equation has been a part of historic anti-Semitism in the church. So where Judas becomes not just a character in the Gospels, but the personification of Jewish people in Christian artwork and thought and literature. That's very much true. And that is to ignore the fact that our master had two other disciples, as we learned last time, also named Yehuda. That would be Thomas and Thaddeus. And he also had a brother named Yehuda, who left us the book of Jude. So, not really a fair equation to make, but he's right about this. It is the source of much hatred and anti-Semitism. He says the story is highly conflicted and lacks credibility. Alright, what is highly conflicted mean? He just means there's discrepancies between the Gospels. And we're going to take a look at the discrepancies that he brings up. And I will remind you that as we began this section of the book that's looking at gospel discrepancies, we kind of ran over the origin of the gospels. How did we get our gospels? Where did how did these gospels come to us? Who wrote them, etc., etc.? And I would refer you back to that teaching as a foundation for understanding and for actually becoming comfortable with gospel discrepancies. One last point he makes here right in the introduction. Judas did not betray Jesus according to the newly discovered Gospel of Judas. And he never really brings that up any further, just throws it into the introduction there at about the time this book would have been written. That would have been fresh in the news. National Geographic released that Gospel of Judas and Gospel of Judas Special, and it was front page news. It was a big deal. Remember this about 2 years ago? No? Some of you do? Yeah? Gospel of Judas. Well, it was a Gnostic gospel, like the Nag Hammadi Gospels. We talked about Gnostic Gospels a little bit. So it has, in terms of historical reliability or credibility, it's below zero as a Gnostic gospel. But nevertheless, an interesting thing occurred in the story, the ongoing saga of the Gospel of Judas, because the big news about Gospel of Judas was actually Judas didn't betray the master, right? This was from the Gospel of Judas. He was actually his most devoted disciple. And so it kind of turns things on its head. Well, more recently, other scholars have taken a look at it and said, you translated that completely backwards. And National Geographic seized on the backwards translation to make it a big splashy headline. Judas doesn't betray Jesus. He's the best disciple. So in the academic world, this was considered a shameless travesty of releasing this document with this faulty translation and making all this hoodoo about it. So it's an irrelevant point in any case. Okay, but we'll just stick with the real Gospels. And so he's going to give us a list of these conflicts in the story of Judas. Here we go. Number one, why did Judas betray Jesus? Two different answers coming out of the Gospels. One is the devil made him. All right, remember? He's at the Last Seder, John 13:27, and Satan entered him. Right? Or Luke 22:3 is another text speaking about the satanic nature of the betrayal. So I'll go grab that Luke text. I don't know. Devil made me do it. So Luke 22:3 says, "And Satan entered into Judas, who was called Iscariot, belonging to the number of the 12." The other tradition here, being reported by Mark and Matthew, is that the devil was not involved. Now, I'm curious to look these passages up and see if they say the devil was not involved. So, let's see. 14:10 of Mark says, "Then Judas Iscariot, who was one of the 12, went off to the chief priests in order to betray him to them." So, that doesn't say the devil was not involved. And Matthew 27... Verse 3, "When Judas, who had betrayed him, saw that he had been condemned, he felt remorse and returned," right at the top, "he felt remorse for what he had done." So, is this really a contradiction? Not according to the way that the Gospels understand demonology. The Gospel writers never portray like a hard distinction in demonology between spiritual and physical. This is something that's very difficult for people to get their minds around, because in our world, which is sort of, I think, from a Greco worldview, there's such a vast expanse between what is spiritual and what is physical, right? There's like, you wonder, you know, somebody has a bad... I'll give you this. I know a neurologist, okay, who finds it very troubling that the Gospels connect epilepsy, epileptic seizures, and demonic possession, right? Because I mean, it's not demonic possession. It's a short circuit in the brain. That this neurologist can show you the spot in the brain where it's short circuiting. You know, it's not demonic possession. So what's going on there? But you didn't even have to go as far as epilepsy. In the Gospels, we find somebody is deaf at one point. There's a deaf person, and the master drives out a spirit of deafness out. He's like, wait a second, the guy's ears didn't work. It doesn't mean he's demon possessed. You know, he's not. It's a very real physical malady. You know, that somebody should be deaf, right? So. It's a little frustrating, maybe from our perspective sometimes, to see this lack of distinction. It's almost like a superstitious worldview from our perspective. But from the gospel writer's perspective and from the master's perspective, it's not superstitious. It's the idea that there is everything, every physical thing is also infused with spiritual realities, and that they're not really separable. And so for that reason, we should be treating them as physical realities in the physical and spiritual realities in the spiritual. And not ever like separating and saying, no, it's one, it's the other. Because it's never one or the other, it's always both. And with everything. So anyway, that's an aside. Why is that relevant? Because of Judas. Did the devil make him do it? No, the devil didn't make him do it. Was the devil involved? Well, sure. Absolutely. Who suggested the bribe? John 13:29, you have one tradition. John presented as a corrupt treasurer of the disciples. Who suggested the bribe? Or the priesthood? Mark 14:10. See, this is not a contradiction. That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's not a contradiction whatsoever. That's making an inference off of and then using the inference that you made to contradict the synoptic accounts. Okay, sorry about that. I didn't mean to waste your time. Number three, did Judas name his betrayer at the last? No, I'm sorry. Did Jesus name his betrayer at the Last Supper? Did Jesus name his betrayer at the Last Supper? Mark says no. Let's have this side of the room look up the no references. Mark 14, 18 and Luke 22:21-22. We'll have this side of the room look up the yes references. And the yes references are John 13:26 and Matthew 26:25. All right, you guys, you know people ready?
Yeah, I
know. Did Jesus name his betrayer at the Last Supper? Go ahead.
Well, you didn't come up with a name.
No, you didn't come up with the name?
No.
All right, any inferences there or anything?
Just not in Mark.
Okay, all right. Okay. How about Luke?
He doesn't say whose hand.
Oh, okay, he didn't say whose hand. Okay, how about you guys over here, the yes people? What is John, give us John 13:26. Okay, and Matthew 26:25.
Right. Then Judas, which betrayed him, answered and said, Master, is it I? He said unto him, Thou hast said.
He says to Judas, Thou hast said, which is a little ambiguous.
No.
Is there anyone who finds a contradiction here?
No.
Okay, not doing real well. Asher, Norman, on convincing us, but here's something more significant, okay? How did Judas die? Okay? So we'll have this side, Yamini, to look up Acts 1:15-22. All right, Acts 1:15-22. And we'll have this side look up Matthew 27:5. Because there is a real difference here. Yes. And while you're looking up, I thought just for fun, you're looking at Matthew 27:5. And I thought just for fun, as long as we're all looking at, we're looking at some discrepancies, I thought I'd throw in a third. And bring up another one from Papias. All right. Give us the Acts one, the Acts version of the story, by Luke. Who's going to read it?
Now this man acquired a field with the reward of his wickedness, and falling headlong, he burst open in the middle, and all his bowels gushed out, and became known to all the inhabitants of Jerusalem. So that the field was called in their own language, Akeldama, that is, field of blood.
So what happened there? He bought a field. And then
he fell headlong and his bowels split open.
So he took a fall.
Yeah.
Out in his field.
In the middle of a field, not on a rocky cliff.
Right. Okay. And this he bought the field with the money. You got that?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. Over here, how did he die?
Five. Hurling the pieces of silver into the sanctuary, he left. Then he went off and hanged himself.
So he hung himself over here. So one says he tripped and fell.
Oh, no. It didn't say he tripped.
Well, I added that part. Maybe it was the other 11 disciples. He fell.
Or the
Well,
maybe they were broken, then he fell.
Enough to burst your guts out.
Sure.
He's up there long enough, he will. Well,
I imagine.
I've heard that theory of harmonizing them by saying, then the rope broke. And, you know, so that's, maybe that's how it, and he fell. When the rope broke. I don't know.
He told us where the tree was that he hung himself on.
Well, but that's interesting because Matthew didn't put it in the field there.
No.
So I think it's fair to say that you do have a discrepancy here. Maybe it can be reconciled. Probably it can be harmonized. And we certainly can do that through some creative ways. We just have a discrepancy about how he died. So I'll throw in one more. I promised you.
Okay.
I'd throw in one more. This is from Papias. And so this comes from oral traditions of the apostolic community, allegedly. Judas walked about in this world as a great example of impiety. For his body, having swollen to such an extent that he could not pass where a chariot could easily pass. No wonder the rope broke, right? He was crushed by the chariot so that his bowels gushed out.
I have another person's
You have another interpretation?
I like that question, though. What chariot? He was crushed by the chariot. What chariot? Because the chariot is, in early Judaism, the chariot is a reference to the throne of God. That's a name for the throne of God.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. The Merkava from Ezekiel 1. Yes.
By Dr. John Lightfoot.
Oh, Dr. John Lightfoot. We want to hear what he's a great Hebraist and Talmudist and so on.
So he says, he writes, the devil immediately after Judas had cast back his money into the temple, caught him up into the air, strangled him, threw him headlong, and dashed him in pieces on the ground. That, end quotes. He refers to Tobit 3:8 and adds that this was known to all the dwellers at Jerusalem, argues that it was no common and ordinary event, and must be something more than hanging himself, which was an accident not so very unusual in that nation.